Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. When it comes to travel, we all have that one happy place, whether it's the beach, ski slopes, a little couple's getaway, or even to visit that best friend that you haven't seen in way too long. And Priceline wants to get you there for a happy price, so you never have to miss a trip. I even did their jingle, did you hear that? Personally, my happy place is the beach, sitting next to Drew, pina colada in one hand, book in the other. And now, thanks to Priceline's VIP family feature, you can go to your happy place more often while earning deals up to 5 times faster with a group. When one person from the squad travels, everybody gets more deals. And you even get to choose your crew. It doesn't have to be your actual family. Ugh, just kidding. I love you, family. But it could be your neighbor, your roommate, your mailman, anyone. The more you travel, the more you save. Maybe I'll invite my mailman. Just kidding. I don't know him. So I'll bring Elena, Mikey, and Dave, and of course, my Who's Band. So download the Priceline app today to save up to 60% off select hotels and go to your happy price with Priceline.
Hey, weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this is Morbid.
Morbid. You know why?
It's Elena's Morbid. It's Elena-centric.
And we know I can't do a mini.
You can't even do a regular main episode anymore without it being like 42 hours long.
I know.
She's insane. Ever since I upped my research game, you're like, same.
I'm like, I'll do it too.
But where will I go from here?
I'm double downing. That's what I'm doing.
You are.
Or doubling down, either way. So
I was like, that sounds not right. I'm here for either way. I'm here for it.
Yeah, words, they're hard. Well, this one, I got the bare bones of it together and like the outline. It was like 5 pages,
which is like normally what my full case is.
Well, and I was like, 5 pages is gonna be like nothing. Like I was actually like, oh shit, maybe I shouldn't even do this game.
I hit 5 pages and I'm like, we got an hour.
There it is. Good. No, I was like really upset about it. I was like, come on, there's got to be more. And then I found the court documents.
I was like, a good court document.
Here we are. And I got so much more information. I was so excited. And now it's 10 and a half pages. So everybody settle in because it's going to be a long one.
I need to ask, how many pages was the Scream murder for you? Do you remember?
That was like 11 and a half, I think.
Okay, so we should prepare for like an hour and 45 minutes, I would say.
It kind of depends on like discussions, I think, too. that like
how often I interrupt you.
How often you interrupt me, exactly. So I think we don't really have any business to get to, but what we're going to be covering today is the case of Kim Edwards and Lucas Markham, aka the Twilight Killers.
So Elena told me that it's called the Twilight Killers, but she won't tell me why.
It's true.
Because she wants a real reaction.
I do. I was like, I can't tell you beforehand because it's weird that they're called the Twilight Killers because it seems like a very small part of the case.
Right.
But it's small, but it's shocking. I think it's the part of the case that you're like, what?
I just, for me, I'm just like, do they think that they're vampires? It's like a Jeremy Stanky where he thought he was a werewolf.
That would make it easy. But, okay. You know, it's funny because when I was reading, so they are both 14-year-olds and they are in a relationship together.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were. And
you know, a 14-year-old you know, relationship.
Yeah. But it was a real intense one. And it reminds me of the Jasmine Richardson, Jeremy Stanky relationship in the way that they were like, it's us against the world.
Right.
They were weirdly obsessed with each other. They became way too connected. And then they started looking at people who were trying to keep them apart. Like, and they were enemies. Like, you gotta go.
All right, well, let's dive in.
Now, this one also, besides the Jeremy Stanky and Jasmine Richardson case, this one really reminded me of the Myra Hindley and Ian Brady case.
Which I don't know that much about.
I know too much about that case.
What else is new?
Because before I had kids, I do it now, but much more before, I obsessively read cases. Like, I know every case known to man at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember the Myra Hindley and Ian Brady case fascinated me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could not stop reading about it because it was just so unbelievable. And now I always said, I was like, I have trouble looking at it now because it has to do with kids and it just changes. But a lot of people have asked to do it. It's a huge case. It is fascinating. It deserves to be told. So I'm going to take one for the team, guys, because after reading this case and it was compared to that one, and I'm going to mention it in here, I've decided that I'm going to cover the Ian Brady and Myra Hindley case next week.
Whoa.
And it's a big one.
Next week is going to be a big week. We're going to have the completion. Yeah. That's a gross word. Of my case. And then your Myra Hindley. Myra Hindley case.
Moira.
I was thinking about Moira Rose.
You were.
Because I just used that gif recently.
But yeah, we'll have part three of the Brenda Schaefer case from Ash. And then we'll start the Myra Hindley and Ian Brady, which I'm fairly positive is going to be more than one part. But
yeah, I would think so.
We'll try. But I think hopefully you guys will be psyched about that because a lot of people have asked for it and I've been like avoiding it a little.
Well, we haven't done a heavy hitter in a while.
We do. And that one's a big one. So I feel like it's important to do. So we'll be doing that. You're definitely going to hear about it very briefly, not like really any details in this case, but it gets mentioned a lot, mainly because this one's part is a UK case as well. So this is not an American case. So hello, international listeners. We're here.
Hello.
We're here for you. So Kim Edwards and Lucas Markham. This crime occurred in Spalding, Lincolnshire, New England.
Okay.
Nope, not in New England.
I was going to say New England. Or
very used to saying New England because I live there.
Or actual England. Old actual, England.
The original, the OG England. Oh, we're off to a good start, guys.
Good, good, good.
So, Spalding, Lincolnshire. Not sure if it's Lincolnshire or Lincolnshire, but you guys will tell me, and you'll do it nicely.
I was going to say, yeah, okay.
I'm sure. So the victim in this case is 49-year-old Elizabeth Edwards. She was a single mother of two daughters, 14-year-old Kim Edwards and 13-year-old Katie Edwards.
Big spoiler alert already.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. It's like, just throwing it it's in like there.
The murderer, her daughter,
Kim is Kim. Her child. So, on April 14th, 2016... Elizabeth was absent from work.
Okay.
And she wasn't just absent. She hadn't called in. She worked as a lunch lady.
No show.
Yeah. And she worked as a lunch lady. They call it a dinner lady in all the things I read about this and heard about this. It's very Very English of them, and I like it.
Maybe it's like, is it like dinner's lunch and then like supper is our dinner?
Probably.
We, I don't know.
Honestly, it's us who says everything weird. So like,
yeah, we're uncultured swines in America.
You guys have it right. So we just like mess it all up.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that she was a dinner lady at the local primary school.
Mm-hmm.
She loved working there. She was always on time. She was early. She never would not show up and not call.
Right.
So immediately, all of a sudden, ding, 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 the radars are going up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kim and Katie were also absent from school that day.
Which is weird.
And nobody had called to say that they were going to be absent. So people were like, huh, why are all three of them not here?
Yeah, that's cause for concern.
Now, Elizabeth, the mother, did have a partner, Graham Green. And he was trying to get in touch with her, and he couldn't get in touch with her.
Okay.
And he said he was very concerned by this because she always answered the phone. I believe he was like a truck driver or a lorry driver. And so he was gone a lot, but when he was gone, he said they talked constantly. They were in constant communication. So he was like, this was very concerning to me.
Yeah.
Now, Katie and Elizabeth, the mother, Katie was the 13-year-old. They were very close. They just had one of those mother-daughter relationships where, like, Katie adored her mother. She would, like, hang outside of the school waiting for her to come out from work. And, like, they always hung out together. They were just very close. They just happened to have that relationship. Kim was not as close with her mom.
Okay.
And it just seemed like neither one of them really...
They just didn't get each other?
Yeah, they just didn't get each other. It wasn't... They didn't get along. I think Kim seemed, and we're going to see this later... not the easiest child to get along with, but it also seems like her mother may not have been the easiest mother for her to get along with.
That speaks to my soul.
Yeah, it's like her mother, Elizabeth, seems like a wonderful person.
Mm.
She seems like, you know, but there was definitely some troubles that happened.
You know what my therapist always says? She says, sometimes it's like not the right parent for the right kid. Like, you don't always get matched up how it should have been.
Oh, yeah, I remember you saying that. That makes sense. Well, unfortunately, so Kim had a 14-year-old boyfriend.
Okay.
Named, I don't know if anybody can guess.
I don't know.
Lucas Markham.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yes. He was also not in school.
And
and was reported missing by his aunt who he lived with.
Okay.
So it's getting weird. Why are all these people out? Where are they?
Sketchy, sketchy.
And nobody can find them. It's not like they're just at home, like, and they're like, yeah, we're out.
In their PJs.
Like, exactly.
Watching The Price is Right because they're not feeling well today.
Or are they? I don't know.
I don't know.
Do you know?
I mean, I do that because you said
this is
a morbid case.
It is. So relatives came over to the Edwards home at different times during the day and were like knocking on the door. Just calling out for them because no one's answering the phone. So now they're like, what the fuck's going on?
Like, do we go there?
So, I mean, relatives, I mean, I think Lucas's aunt had come over a couple of times and knocked on the door because she was like, maybe he's there.
Mm-hmm.
People are freaking out. They came over at 5:10 p.m., 9 p.m., and 9:46 p.m.
And nothing.
No one answered the door, but they did hear the dog barking inside.
Uh-oh.
So they're like, what is going on?
Right.
But of course, nobody's banging down the door yet because...
It's been a few hours.
So 36 hours later, from when they first went missing, around noontime, the police have now been called by various people, and they come to the home, they knock on the door, same thing, don't hear anything except a dog barking inside. So they open the door.
Right.
Because they're like, this is a wellness check now. We can come
in. We need to go in there.
We're concerned. So in the home, Lucas and Kim, the two 14-year-olds that are dating.
They were there.
Just sitting there in the living room. They've been there the entire time people have been knocking.
Are they just like watching TV?
They're sitting on a mattress that they had brought into the living room. They're cuddled under a blanket together, watching television. Like, nothing is happening around them.
They're straight up chilling. They're Netflix and chilling.
Just hanging out with some ice cream. There were alcohol bottles around. They're just hanging out.
What? What?
And the police are like, oh, hey, people have been knocking for days.
Did you hear them?
Like, hello. And they were just like, oh, hey.
Real weird that they, I mean, obviously we know what they did, but like at least a little bit. Real weird that they just stayed there.
Oh, it gets weirder.
Okay.
So police were like, hey, where is Elizabeth and Katie, your mom and your sister? And Kim says, upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And they asked, what happened to your mother and sister? Are they sick? Why are they upstairs? And Lucas looked them dead in the eye and they said with zero emotion, said, why don't you go upstairs and see? Yeah.
Are you shitting me?
A 14-year-old.
D Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I love Fast Growing Trees because Drew and I love gardening and stuff like that, but we always forget to run our little errands on the weekend where we go to the nurseries and say, I'd like that tree over there, please. But instead, I can just sit my booty on the couch, type in fastgrowingtrees.com, and get whatever plant I want. I just recently ordered a lemon tree because, mama, when life gives you lemons, you can make lemonade and lots of delicious lemon-flavored desserts, which I'm excited about. And it's going to get to my door in 1 to 2 days, and then I'll have so many lemons. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code MORBID at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code MORBID at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MORBID. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
And what did they see? They went upstairs and they found a bloodbath upstairs.
And they just looked at the police and said, why don't you go upstairs and see? What a bunch of shits.
Elizabeth and Katie were both dead in their beds where they were sleeping. Yeah. They were killed while they were sleeping. Blood was on the ceilings, the walls, on the victims, on their beds. Both had been slashed at the throat and both had been there for almost 2 days.
And they're just downstairs eating ice cream, watching TV.
Gets better. So the murder weapon, an 8-inch butcher knife, was still in Katie's room, just left there after they had done it, and not cleaned or anything, just like thrown on a table after they had murdered her. They immediately were arrested.
Yeah, obviously. Yep.
And Lucas said, fuck life, to the cops as he was detained.
They're like, I bet you feel that way now that we're like, detaining you.
They were like, fuck your life, bro, because you're going to go away for a long time.
Fuck you, right?
And they, as they were leading Kim outside, Graham, the partner, shows up.
Oh no, poor Graham.
And they're leading her outside. He said he looked her dead in the eye and was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, he just looked at her because he was like in shock, what's happening? She immediately put her head down and wouldn't look him in the eye. And he said he was just devastated.
Oh no.
He said he was the one who had to identify Elizabeth.
Oh God.
And he said, quote, it's something I would never wish on my worst enemy, to identify someone you love.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So, obviously, again, they were arrested immediately, and it was determined that they had never left the home after the murders 36 hours prior. They had been in there the entire time with Kim's dead mother and dead little sister, just right upstairs.
Right.
The bathroom was upstairs. So they had to go upstairs where the dead bodies were to use the bathroom.
That's, I don't even like going to my own bathroom, which is like it off of everything in my house when I'm home alone. Yep. Like it freaks me out. Like what?
They were literally walking up there with her mother and her sister lying dead for 2 days, just going to pee and stuff.
What?
Now,
this is very bizarre.
Well, we're going to find out in a little bit exactly what they did during those 36 hours, and hoo boy.
I don't know if, ew.
But before we do that, let's talk about Elizabeth Edwards.
Okay.
Elizabeth Edwards was a single mother, like I said, raising Kim and Katie alone. She was well-liked. She sang in the church choir. She was known to help out with the church. She did a lot of charity work. She was described as bubbly and always happy, always smiling.
So a great person.
Some of the documentaries I saw on this, I think there's like there's one that's like Britain's Killer Kids or something like that.
Yeah.
There's home video that Graham has on his phone or his iPad of her.
Stop.
And she's like dancing in like different outfits in the kitchen and stuff. And she just seemed like a bubbly, happy right. mom. People said she did a lot of after school programs with children because she loved children.
Yeah, I mean, she works at an elementary school and she has two children.
She focused around children a lot. Like I said, she worked as the lunch lady and she worked at St. Paul's Community Primary School.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, the 13-year-old daughter, the second victim, was super popular, super outgoing. People loved her. She was the exact opposite of Kim.
Okay.
Kim is not that.
Okay.
So she was... I think they talked to Kim and Lucas's friend or former friend, Adam, who plays another part in this. He doesn't do anything, but he's part of it. So he was giving an interview and he was like, yeah, like Katie was really popular. Like people really liked Katie. When they found out that she was dead, it was like devastation.
Oh,
like
no.
It hit everyone hard. So Graham, the Elizabeth's partner, said that he and Elizabeth were planning to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the new thing. They were planning to do it. He had bought the family a dog. That was the dog that you heard.
Stop. So this is... Oh.
It's really sad. And he and Katie would take walks with it. He said he, like, really loved the kids.
Yeah.
But he did say Kim was tough.
Yeah.
Like, Kim was tough to get, like, to crack. She had an attitude a lot of the time. And he said... that he was like, you know what, Elizabeth and Kim didn't have like the super close relationship, but he didn't see anything that would make it seem like one was being favored over the other or anything like that. It was just they had different relationships, and he was like, and honestly,
different kids, it's like,
yeah, and he was like, it had more to do with how Katie and Kim interacted with their mother than anything.
It was
just Katie interacted with her happily, and Kim didn't. So it was just the way it is. Now, he also said, Lucas and Kim have destroyed my life. And the family lived in a kind of tough part of town at the time. There was a lot of gangs and drug abuse and violence happening, so it wasn't like a great area.
Mm-hmm.
So Kim Rose Edwards is what she was born.
Okay.
She was born June 13th, 2001, which really hammers in how fucking young they are.
Yeah,
she was born in 2001.
Wow.
Yeah. She was very troubled, not attached to her mother from a very young age.
Oh, really?
Her father left her family when she was a baby. Her mother raised her and her younger sister, Katie, alone, like we said. There was a time, now this is the point where I'm like, this is an odd little blip in their history. There was a time when social services was called.
Uh-huh.
Because there was a fight in the home and Elizabeth, the mother, slapped Kim in the face.
Okay.
There's also reports that she punched Kim in the face. I've seen both.
So that's... Here's the thing, though.
Kim was six.
Oh, okay. So literally not okay
a teenager.
Yeah, no.
Like, not that it's okay to punch a teenager in the face, but slapping?
I think...
I would not slap my child.
I definitely was slapped. Like,
but...
when I was being a bitchy teenager.
I could see slapping a teenager in the face.
Like,
100%. I could understand. Like, that I understand totally.
Right. And I think other people have probably, that's happened to them.
There's not one thing on this planet Earth that a six-year-old does that they deserve to be slapped in the face.
No, not at all. So that's strange.
Now, from what I saw in every outlet I got this information from, Elizabeth called social services on herself.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
And said this happened.
Okay.
Which I'm like,
that's weird.
Wowzers.
Maybe
she just immediately was like, I need to get my shit together. So like, you need to do something.
That's very strange.
Well, Kim and Katie were taken away for a small time.
That's
while
sad.
They were like investigating this and doing the reporting and stuff. It was 6 months that they were taken away.
That's a pretty long time.
Yeah. And they were returned afterwards. But in that time, they spent, you know, time in foster care.
Yeah.
For 6 months. So they returned after the 6 months. Graham said that this was pretty much the point when, like, Kim and Elizabeth's relationship just shattered.
That makes sense.
Which makes sense. Right. But then you're wondering, like, well, what happened before this? Because she slapped her in the face. So it's like they were obviously
I want to know why.
They were obviously not a close mother-daughter to begin with. So, no. But I can't find anything about that.
When it's like, you have to wonder, obviously Kim is like a sociopath. So, and like, very I'm not, clearly. Like we said, it's not okay to hit a six-year-old, but no. I wonder what happened to, like,
you that's know, the thing,
not
you
to make her get slapped, but do you know what I'm saying?
But like, what led to that kind of, like, right. breakdown reaction. Of just normal behavior from a mother?
And that, I feel like the fact that she called on herself is even more telling, because
yeah.
it's almost like she broke for a second and then was like, oh, fuck, what did I do?
Exactly. That's what it seems right. to me. And I couldn't find any information about, like, before this. So
yeah.
we're all just, I mean, we're just here to speculate about it, but either way, that's obviously a very point. Worrisome thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good.
Right.
Doesn't equal you should murder your mother when you're 14, but, you know.
Or ever.
That's just something. No, or ever, but, so yeah, so this is, that was definitely a tipping point, I would say, mm-hmm. probably within their relationship. But after the whole social services thing, Elizabeth had moved them into a new home on Dawson Avenue, and it was like a housing unit, like, you know, kind of like almost like duplexes
okay.
kind of thing, like big apartment buildings or condo sure. kind of things. Kim definitely still did not have a good relationship with her mom. They were fighting a lot. She was very jealous of her sister, Katie.
I had a feeling.
Very jealous. They fought all the time. And Katie and her didn't fight all the time. She took it out on her mom mm-hmm. that they were close and she wasn't. Mm-hmm. So she didn't take it out too much on Katie from what I could see.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie was her younger sister only by a year.
They're very close in age.
Like Irish twins, right. you know? So, and at the time, though, and this is from Kim, nobody else says this,
mm-hmm.
Kim says that her mother would often tell her, you're just like your father, who had abandoned them when she was young. And who had, like, abused drugs and was violent. Like, it was bad. And so, and Kim and Katie, for that matter, but mostly Kim, had seen violence when she was younger between her father.
Yeah.
Her father did abuse her mother.
Well, like, and I'm physically. Sure she harbored a lot of resentment toward her father, and to be told that you're like mm-hmm. the parent that you resent sucks.
Yeah, that's got to be hugely triggering.
Yeah.
But that's also from Kim, who is a lying sociopath. And right. we will see she's very unemotional and very disconnected from reality.
Most likely trying to justify her actions.
Yeah. And, you know, Kim said she felt like, the black sheep. She said Katie got all the attention. And she said, in one of the interviews later, Kim does say, you know, we just didn't get along, me and my mom, from when I was younger. And she says, you know, she clearly loved my sister more, favorited my sister more. And they're like, okay, did she tell you that? And
right.
they were like, and she was like, no, she never came out and said it, but I just knew it.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, it seems like a sibling rivalry thing.
Yeah.
She's just being like, yeah, of course she didn't say it, but like. I just know it.
Well, you do know who the parents' favorite is.
So, of course, the partner, Graham, says there was never any favoritism between them. Again, he just says they had different relationships.
Okay.
And Kim just didn't like hers with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
She just wasn't happy with it, and she didn't know how to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lucas Markham, the boyfriend, mm-hmm. was actually born Stan Lucas Markham. He was born August 1st, 2001.
This is really triggering.
And was born in Peterborough. That's it. Peterborough. She I did it.
Like peanut butter.
High fives to all my UK listeners. High fives. All right. I did it. Watch. I probably got it wrong. And they're going to be like, honey, good try.
Put your hand down.
Peterborough. So he grew up also in an abusive home.
Well, you said he had lived with his aunt, so I wondered what the story was.
Yeah. So when he was 4 years old, his mother died of leukemia.
Oh, that's horrific.
So that's huge. Yep. I mean, my kids are four. That's a big blow. Like, yeah. you know
your mom at that point. Bonded a lot.
Very connected at that point. His father was abusive and alcoholic. He wasn't a good guy. He immediately was in and out of foster care. Like, dad just didn't want to take care of it. His aunt finally took him in for good, became his guardian.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of troubled stuff. And we're going to talk a little bit more about him and his way of like, we're going to talk about how Kim and him were as teenagers soon.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to know how these two met. How did they come together?
Like a history class.
Yeah, almost. one day in eighth grade.
Yes.
Lucas threw a chair across the room in English class in a fit of rage.
Oh.
And Kim was in that class and she was like, "Whew! That's my man."
Oh. Normally I was like, let's not sit near that guy at lunch.
Like, no, she was like,
fuck me up.
That's him. That's my guy.
Wow. Okay.
Now,
different strokes for different folks.
He was a known asshole. He was known to be very aggressive, just very unpredictable.
Some people are really into that.
She was into it.
Okay.
He was angry. He was detached. And the only thing that made him like attached to anything was Kim.
Okay.
Kim showed that she was interested and he was like, whoa, you're mine too. So they immediately, it's like all her her issues that she's bringing to the table and all his issues that he's bringing to the table, they just met each other and were like, whoosh, and just formed this.
They found what they thought they were missing in each other.
Exactly. This fucked up bond that they are just going to become way too attached to each other.
It's never good to only have your partner.
And it becomes a Bonnie and Clyde, us against the world, you know, ending in a blaze of glory kind of
thing. Yeah, it's never good.
And they think they get each other because of their, like, traumatized.
And, like, nobody else does.
Yeah, no one gets us. Now, according to court documents, they were also obsessed with talking about suicide. Okay. And it mentions that they did this often with one other girl, but she isn't named in the court documents.
Interesting.
They had a super obviously toxic and very codependent relationship with each other right off the bat. Again, they're only 14.
Right.
So already having too attached of a relationship is not a good thing at that age because you're like, okay, calm down.
Yeah.
But having the kind of toxic, codependent, just like us against the world kind of relationship at 14 just is no good.
No.
And obviously no one was happy with that around them. They were often later compared to Myra Hensley and Ian Brady.
Okay.
Because apart, sure, they were, you know, they had some fucked up shit going on. They both came from kind of like crazy upbringings, but it was together that they became lethal.
Okay.
Like Myra Hensley and Ian Brady.
It's just like,
apart, they were fucked up. And sure, they probably weren't people you wanted to like be in a dark alley with.
But when they found each other is together, when it was like the explosion or the spark.
Everyone I saw said that apart, if they had never got together, they don't think this would have happened. They don't think that the mother would have been murdered. They
That's
do not
awful.
Think that the sister would have been murdered. This could have been avoided if they weren't together.
Okay.
So that's not good.
No.
Now, Lucas was, he had a tough go, I mean,
all
right
around.
Off the bat and then all the way through.
That's sad.
He was bullied constantly.
Oh, I don't, that's never okay.
Yeah. And then she started getting bullied because she was dating him.
Okay.
So it further cemented their us against the world, no one gets us there.
I just don't understand bullying.
No,
I don't get it.
I'll never get it. I really won't. But friends said that they were creeped out with how attached and close they were. Like, they were like,
well, when you're 14 too, you're like, okay, like, what?
Like, calm down.
Like, wanna come over for a sleepover and like not hang out with your boyfriend?
Yeah, like, please. And Lucas was always at the Edwards house, but it wasn't like he was this welcome presence at the Edwards house.
Right.
Graham said he immediately didn't like Lucas as soon as he met him.
Well, you get a vibe.
He said he had a super attitude, like, way too, like, full of himself. He was quiet and arrogant and, like, just shitty to everybody.
I'd be like, get out of my house, you 14-year-old fuckface.
Well, and Graham also said he wore the same clothes all the time and never washed.
That's bothered disgusting.
Him. So he was like, yeah, you're gross. Please leave. Now, according to court documents, he was also violent and aggressive, like, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you could tell by him throwing a chair across the English class.
It's a good indicator.
He would punch and headbutt walls and doors at home. Like,
that's sad. Like, headbutting?
Yeah, he had a lot of, like, outbursts.
That sounds like, something that hasn't been diagnosed. Like, do you know what I mean?
But they did do a psychological, assessment of him later.
Sure. And he's fine?
Yeah.
Wow.
There were also a ton of physical fights between him and his younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And his poor aunt was like trying to get help for him. And she was like, I have no idea what to do. She would call the police and be like, help me. She just didn't know what to do.
That poor woman.
He would also self-harm a lot.
Kim
also was known to self-harm. It seems to me like there's just so much going on.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot that was happening when they were born. And then I think nurture took over from there.
Yeah, this is very sad.
This is a nature and nurture case for sure. So Lucas also definitely had an abandonment issue. Like, that was clear that he, because his mother had died when he was four, his father had abandoned him, and he was shoved into foster care.
In foster care, you get attached, then you have to go, and then you get attached, and you have to go.
Exactly. So he already has this crazy control issue.
Yeah.
And he was known to become most violent and physically and verbally aggressive.
If that was, like, threatened.
When he loses any sense of control, or when he was criticized at all, and especially if he was criticized by an adult or someone in authority.
That is, that stems from all of that.
Yeah, it's a total abandonment issue.
Right.
Now, by summer 2015, Lucas was getting in a ton of trouble at school because, again, he threw a chair across an English class.
God only knows what else he was doing in all the other classes.
He ended up being put in this, like, special pod for, like, troubled teens.
Oh, shit.
And it was like they would all just be in this one class.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth was not into Lucas either. She did not like him dating her daughter. She was very worried.
Well, she's like, Kim already has an attitude problem. Like, this is the last thing she needs, I bet.
Yeah, and she was like, he's a really bad influence on her. And then she could see how close they were and how obsessive they were. And they were already in a sexual relationship. And she found that out and she was freaking out.
Yeah.
She's 14 years old. Of course, any parent's going to be like,
help.
So Elizabeth finally in 2015 banned him from coming over. He could not come to the house. Now, Kim and Lucas, in response to this, ran away together, and they lived in a tent in the woods for 6 days.
Wow. I mean, impressive.
No one knew where they were. Like, they just, they took clothes and food and all that stuff, and they just took off, lived in this tent in the woods for 6 days. And apparently they were finally found after the 6 days by people who recognized them when they went into town.
Okay.
And they were like, hey, you have to go home, and they brought them home. Apparently at school, everybody found out about this and they thought it was hilarious, like, because they were just a joke.
That's really sad.
They were sent back to their homes, and Elizabeth referred to them at this time as a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. Like, cause, so she knew. She was like, something bad is happening out of this.
Right.
Because if my 14-year-old ran away with her fucking crazy boyfriend and they were both already showing these signs, ran away and lived in a tent in the woods for 6 days, I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Well, imagine as a, because what are you supposed to do? Like, what do you do?
What are your options
here? Right. Like, she's already showed you that you can't really do anything.
No. It's like you ban this kid from your house and they run away together.
So, like, what option is there?
Like, honestly, at this point, I'd be like, well, I guess I just move. Put you in prison in my own house and you don't get to leave. Like, I don't even know what you would do.
But even Jasmine Richardson's parents did that, remember?
Yeah.
And he would, like, sneak in.
And look what happened.
Same thing happened.
That's why these cases scare the shit out of me.
I was going to say.
Because the helplessness that comes along with this. And I just, I was looking at this case and then this morning I woke up and, like, the girls came, like, bouncing down the stairs. And I was like,
please love me forever.
Like, I was like, please don't bring home a Lucas or a Jeremy, please.
No.
I swear, no offense to any Lucas or Jeremy listening, but I swear if one of them brings home one named at that, I'm going to be like, no, not okay.
Sorry. We have a strict policy in this house.
And I will have a bone saw at home and I'll be like, this is what will happen to you, buddy.
God.
I'm going to be a scary ass mom.
Oh, man.
So now it's ticking time bomb. Shit's going down.
Right.
So after this is when Kim really amped up the self-harming.
That's sad.
It's all sad. This whole thing is very sad.
Do you know if she was put in therapy or anything like that?
They definitely tried. She was assessed by different psychologists. A lot of different psychologists said she's just an angry kid. Like, and they were like, and this does stem from, you know, her father left when you were young.
Abandonment
issues.
There
was an abuse in the house. You know, she was part of the abuse in the house at a time.
Right.
This is all just pretty par for the course. Like, she's not being... Yeah, and I think they were also, I think part of the problem here was she wasn't, it's hard to explain, like, because this is no one's fault, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just all a culmination of shit.
Yeah.
And it's obviously Kim and Lucas's fault.
Yes,
at the end
obviously.
Of the day. But I mean, like, creating this is a different thing. But I think she just wasn't, she needed a little more than she was
It's
getting.
Again, the parent and the child are not always the right fit for each
other.
Exactly.
And I don't think she was just not getting...
And I hope nobody thinks I'm saying that in a way where it's like, it's the mom's fault or...
No.
I mean, it is her fault that she killed her mom, but in the, like, it's not her fault before that.
Yeah. It's hard to explain. It's hard to put into words.
So at the
end of the day, Kim is to blame here. She's a fucking murderer. So is Lucas.
Right.
Bada boop. But we like to look at how these things form, you know, like how, especially when it has to do with a child and a mother.
Parent and kid relationships are always interesting to me.
Yeah, you have to look at it deeper. And I think what was happening was Kim obviously had all those background things and she needed something that she wasn't getting psychologically, I think. I think she needed some deeper look at her psyche a little bit.
You know, maybe she didn't even know what she needed.
And to be honest, with the way you hear her talk about it later, it might not have helped, to be quite honest, because she's very detached from this whole and from emotions.
Sometimes they're just born that way.
Sometimes you are just a sociopath and that's the way it is. But
put that on a shirt.
Sometimes you're just a sociopath and that's the way it is. TM.
Small writing. Small font.
Yeah, you know. So after this, in 2016, Kim did confide in a teacher that she felt close to. She wrote this teacher a letter, and it said, "I have tried to remain strong, but I can't fight anymore. Now I feel that death is the only way."
Oh, can you imagine being the poor teacher that gets that?
Yes. Well, and this teacher did the right thing. They referred her to a mental health service for youths at the time. She was seen, and she was released. They did not think anything was concerning.
Okay.
So in March 2016, Lucas was expelled from school, finally. Shit. And was sent to another school, which was an hour and a half away. Mm-hmm. So Kim and he could not see each other at school during the day anymore.
So that was not good.
Obviously, she became depressed. He was upset. They could only see each other at night, and they couldn't see each other at Kim's house. So it was becoming, the world is pulling us apart.
Right.
What do we do? How do we fight against
this? We break up. We go our separate ways. The end.
Nope. So she did attempt suicide by taking an overdose of pills.
Oh, that's sad.
People at the school, according to some of the people that were interviewed, kids at the school, like, were joking about this.
Yeah, because kids are fucking horrible.
Kids are dicks.
I remember, like, things like this happen. Not completely, like, the same, but I remember, like, things like that happened. Things
happening.
And kids are just like, oh, like, that girl's a weirdo. Like, she tried to kill herself.
Yeah,
and
it's like,
yeah, that's fucked up.
They don't understand the gravity of what it is.
Because your frental lobe hasn't developed in your shit head.
Especially 8th grade, 9th, you're children.
And that's when, I feel like that's when a lot of people have these problems. It's like 8th grade.
Because it's a hard age.
It is,
man. Yeah. That's a really hard time to, I mean, I'm sure everybody can agree, unless you're one of those, like, magical unicorns that were like, junior high was the best for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's a tough time.
It is.
There's a lot going on, because it's like puberty's happening, lots of, like, coming of age things are happening.
Right.
It's just too much. It's a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is.
And everybody has a different home life. It's like.
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of that stuff happens and kids never know how to deal with it. So they're just like, make a joke.
Crazy.
So kids are fucked.
moral of that story. Yeah.
Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick. It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which, like, that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation. In 2015, HBO's The Jinx unraveled one of the most notorious unsolved crimes in New York's history, exposing long-buried information discovered during the filmmaker's decades-long investigation of Robert Durst, scion of New York's billionaire real estate family. Now, The Jinx is back for part two, where the filmmakers continued investigating for 8 years, uncovering hidden material, Durst prison calls, and interviews with people who had never come forward. If you're looking for more about The Jinx, you can also check out The Jinx podcast. hosted by director Andrew Jarecki and EP Zach Stewart Pontier. The podcast will begin with an episode-by-episode look back of Part 1, featuring never-before-heard audio between Durst and Jarecki, along with insights from the series' creators. Then the podcast will cover The Jinx Part 2 as the series releases on Max. Watch the HBO original documentary series The Jinx Part 2, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Jinx podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
So once she was released from the hospital, everybody's trying to break these two up.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to keep them apart, but they are just refusing to part ways.
Mm-hmm.
April 3rd, this is interesting. She posted on Facebook April 3rd, and it was like this moody, angsty photo. It's like black and white, and it's her just like looking moodily at the camera with no smile. And
edited on Picnic app.
Yeah, and she has glasses on. It's in black and white. And her mother, Elizabeth, commented mm-hmm. on the photo.
Now, I used to fucking hate when my mom would comment on my fucking Facebook things.
Wow. Okay.
I'd get so mad.
Hello, I'm 430 years old, so I didn't have to deal with that, and I'm very happy about it.
It's the worst.
I'm like, whoa. Now, this is April 3rd. This is days before these murders happen, mm-hmm. like a couple weeks.
What does she comment?
So she comments, "Where's your beautiful smile?"
Oh.
And Kim responds, "It disappeared." And her mother says, "Why, hun?" And she responds, "I don't know." And then she follows it by emojis of a panda, a bear, a unicorn, a cookie, a smiley face with glasses, another smiley face, and then an upside down smiley face.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm trying to decipher that. So like all her recent
emojis probably, I guess?
Well, and her mother says, "I think it's under your bed, LOL."
Oh, she's like, "I'm trying to get you, and I don't."
Well, and then Kim responds with like this cute little picture of like a cartoon dog sleeping in bed. Like a little gif.
And this is like a few days before she brutally murders her mother.
And then her mom responds with like another cartoon in bed. Like they had a funny little exchange. So they
obviously didn't have like...
So it seems like...
I don't know.
It seems like her mother was trying. And I think it just was too... It was far gone. So April 9th, she stayed at Lucas's house. Uh-oh. Against her... Her mother had told her no. And she stayed there anyway.
Uh-huh.
So she came home the next day and found that her mother had put all her stuff into bags and given it to her younger sister, Katie.
That's a weird punishment.
And had gotten rid of, like, put other stuff in bags as, like, a punishment. Like, I'm emptying out your room.
Okay.
So from the court documents directly, it says, Doubtless because of their unhappiness together, the two had previously run away from home. They were found some miles away and then returned to their families. This is talking about the tent thing.
Yep, yep.
Over the weekend before the killings, they barricaded themselves in Lucas Markham's room before leaving through a window, returning to Kim Edwards's home in order to collect her contraceptives. When they returned, Lucas Markham was rugby tackled and restrained by his family. And Kim Edwards was returned to her home where she found her mother had moved her belongings from the room she shared with her younger sister. Lucas Markham's room had been cleared out by his family as well.
Okay.
So I think what had happened here, and again, I'm not saying anybody is right or wrong here, like as in the sense of parenting.
We're
right,
just assessing right this, the situation.
Right in this situation. Lucas's aunt and family were like,
"We're done.
We're done." Like, I'm sure you reach a point where you're like, "I don't know what to fucking do with this kid. I don't know what to do."
That's like so when I wouldn't clean my room and Papa would put all my stuff in trash bags and leave it in my room and be like,
"Oh, yeah.
Clean it up."
My parents, my dad was always like, "I will give you a couple of shots to clean that room."
And he always gave, like, I always got a lot of shots.
He gave a lot of shots, but he would tell me,
"You have a day. I
will throw all of your stuff in this room into the backyard."
Yeah.
"And you will have to pick it all up."
He never threw my stuff in the backyard, but I came home from school one day and all my stuff was in trash bags, and I was livid.
But I bet you kept it clean.
Oh, yeah. I kept it real clean.
And he actually did. Actually, he did it to my older sister.
My mom.
And I remember one day, because they were horrible. They were keeping filthy. Their room clean. They were filthy pigs. And my dad literally took everything in her room and threw it out the back window onto the back lawn. And he was like, "Well, I guess you'll keep it clean from there," because my parents were not like screamers or
no.
hitters or anything like that. They did shit like that that you were like, oh shit.
I feel like that's better.
I think
you learn more from it.
Yeah, because it doesn't hurt anybody. It's just like,
it just pisses you off, and it pisses you off, but you still have to, you got to get your stuff back out of the bags.
It's a big inconvenience too. That's what it is.
So you won't do it again.
So I think Lucas's aunt and his family were like, let's just empty out his fucking room, because if they're gonna hole up in there and barricade themselves in his room, like, fuck you, man. This isn't my house. This isn't your room.
Right.
Like, I'm gonna empty it out. Now you can have an empty cell. And I think her mom was doing the same thing. She was like, you know what? There goes all your stuff. If you're not going to listen to me, and you two are just going to continue this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you understand.
But I wonder if they talked to each other, like the aunt and the mom. They might have.
I wonder.
Yeah.
They might have.
Like, made a plan.
Yeah, they might have. Well, this was the moment that they both were like, we're going to kill Elizabeth and Katie now.
Yeah. Why did Katie... And also, it's weird to me that they didn't... Like, I'm happy they didn't kill the aunt, but, like, why is it her family?
Because the aunt was not... What they felt was that Elizabeth was more involved with trying to keep them apart than the aunt was.
And was Katie just, like, collateral?
Well, we'll find that out. But one of the other things on top of it was that Kim uses the... My sister is the favorite.
Okay.
And that's the other thing. So she wants to kill her mom for not giving her the attention she gives Katie, and then Katie's got to go because she's the object of the attention. So in the days leading up to the murder now, they were planning it thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot use this whole, like, we just decided to do it. No, they sat and planned this.
Oh, God.
They sat in a McDonald's and, you know, ate Happy Meals and talked about it.
Stop ruining fast food restaurants for me.
They took romantic walks and talked about it. They had it totally planned. So initially, they planned for him to take 4 knives out of his aunt's home.
Jesus.
Walk to the Edwards home, which is about 3/4 of a mile away.
Oh, not far at all.
It was going to be in the middle of the night. Kim was going to let him through a window. He was going to tap 3 times, and that's how she would know.
Cute.
And so, and then they were, and what they initially planned was that Lucas was going to kill Elizabeth and Kim was going to kill Katie.
Okay.
That was their plan. Now, they tried this 2 times on April 11th and April 12th, but each time he would come and knock and Kim had fallen asleep.
I'm glad.
Everybody, hear this again. They had planned to kill her mother and her sister, and on the nights they had this planned...
She fell asleep twice.
She fell asleep.
Like, would so it didn't mean anything.
Fall asleep knowing that you were about to kill your mother and your sister with butcher knives in your home with your boyfriend?
No.
That, to me, is like...
Disconnected out of reality.
Bitch is on a different planet.
Like, a different wavelength completely.
She's not even here with us. Mm-mm. Like, this is so evil. It's like...
Well, she was in Kim's world. She wasn't, like, you know what I mean?
Well, that's one of the things that is a really, like, strong thread through this, is that Kim is very egotistical and very entitled.
Yeah.
You can tell. She wants to be in a relationship with Lucas. She wants it how she wants it. She wants to have sex with him and no one tell her anything about it. She wants to do this. She wants her mother to treat her this way. She wants all the attention.
She's entitled.
She's not getting it, and she's pissed about it.
Right.
And that's what this is about.
Because she's 14, so already you're pretty entitled when you're 14. And then obviously there's a lot more that goes into it with her.
It's just, she's so fucking relaxed on those 2 nights that she just dozes into dreamland.
That's bananas.
So finally on April 13th, they try for the 3rd and final time.
She like got a coffee that day.
Apparently. So Lucas took 4 knives from his aunt's house, walked that 3/4 of a mile to their house. He had a long time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They've had 3 different tries to reconsider this. He went under, like, in the darkest paths he could go so no one would see him. He hopped a back wall in the back garden, and then he went to the window and he tapped on the window 3 times.
Okay.
Now, Kim let him in through the window.
Yeah.
And the way Lucas described it later was, she looks out the window, she sees me there. She waves. I put my thumbs up and she goes to the bathroom window. She opens the bathroom window. I pass my bag through and then I go through. And then she opens my bag. I take a knife out and pass her a knife. She holded the knife, but never...
She holded the knife.
Sure did. She holded that knife. So she holded the knife, but never used the knife. Then I went into her mum's room and stabbed her in the neck while she was asleep on her side, and then smothered her face with a pillow.
Oh, God.
And he says this like he is telling you a grocery list.
He's like, and then I went down the potato aisle and yeah. I got potatoes, because, you know, there's potato aisle.
Obviously, a potato aisle. And then domesticity. He's like, yeah, I just, you know, and then I went and they didn't have my favorite chips, so I went and got different chips. It's literally
that
chill.
I decided I needed some ginger ale.
And he's like, so she was asleep on her side and I smothered her face with a pillow. The end.
I hope at least that she didn't suffer, like,
nope,
the two
she
of
did.
Them.
Oh, they, yeah, oh, they no. both did.
Oh, thanks for
he,
that.
You're welcome. He used an 8-inch butcher knife to do it. Elizabeth was stabbed 8 times,
oh, no.
Including 5 times in her hands as she tried to defend herself.
Oh, no.
One of the 2 blows to her neck almost completely cut through her windpipe.
Oh, God.
They intentionally cut the throats to stop them from crying out, they later said. They had planned that.
That is dark.
Yeah, they both said, well, the voice box is there, so we figured we would cut that off right away so they couldn't cry.
That's your mother and your sister. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, they are super.
They're talking about
evil.
Them, like, less than, like, animals.
Yeah,
like,
less than, I mean, like, an ant you would step on the sidewalk.
Oh, my God.
And when Kim was asked about it, she said she heard gurgling and struggling.
Oh.
And so she went into the room to check to see if Lucas was okay. That's how she puts it. She says, quote, he was on top of her with a pillow over her head. I thought I heard her say, get off me. After about 10 minutes of Lucas putting her weight on her, she was dead. Now, she says 10 minutes. She's a fucking idiot. Because it wasn't 10 minutes. It doesn't take 10 minutes to smother someone.
Right.
And Lucas says it was barely 3 minutes.
I was going
to
say.
I had to do it. But she's like, 10 full minutes. I'm like, do you know what time is? Kim?
Maybe time is different in Kim world.
Everything's different in Kim world.
Yeah.
But she says she heard these noises and went in there desperately to check on Lucas. Not
That's
to check on,
fucked
not
up.
Because she worried about her mother at all, obviously. But, like, for her to say, like, I wanted to check on him. Like, what?
That's insane.
As he murders your mother? Like, you're hearing noises and you're like, I hope he's okay.
Right.
So she says, and this is tough. Okay. This part.
She says.
Just so you know. So Kim says, all I could see was her shoulder and arms. She was struggling. She reached out her hand, so I grabbed it and kind of held it. As I realized it was her hand, I instantly pulled my hand back.
Oh my God.
So she meant to grab Lucas's hand, but her poor mother, as she was dying, reached out to her to hold her hand, and she grabbed it unknowingly. When she realized she grabbed it, she pulled away in disgust. So her mother is dying and being murdered brutally by this little fucking asshole. And she pulls her hand away and is like, oh, I thought that was Lucas's.
What? Like, what happened in your fucking brain? Like, what happened to your brain?
There is just nothing there.
That is, like, darker than dark.
And they say later, I mean, they've come to the conclusion where they're like, they don't think she can be rehabilitated. She's far gone.
This is not one of those things where it's like, when you...
Maybe she'll learn the error of her ways.
Like, how they let Jasmine Richardson out. I don't think
That's
they should
insane.
Have even done that.
No, they absolutely shouldn't have.
That made me... That made
yeah,
me
that
feel,
part really hurt yeah. my heart. But Lucas checked her pulse and confirmed she was dead. Mm-hmm. So, next... in their minds.
Well, then Katie.
Now,
on.
Originally, like I said, she was supposed to kill Katie.
Right.
But she said she couldn't do it. She couldn't mentally get herself to do it. So Lucas was like, well, I'll do it.
Okay.
He says, I went into Katie's room, which is the same as Kim's. I thought I stabbed her, but I'm not 100% sure if it was like her or the mattress.
Oh my God.
And then I smothered her face with a pillow too. Then Kim asked him, did she struggle? And he said, no. And he said, is she dead? And he said, yes. And then he said, then she sort of said, take off your clothes because they're covered in blood. So I did. And then we ran a bath and had a bath together because we were both kind of dirty because she helped take the blood off my face and shirt.
So they had a bath, like, basically across the hall from her dead mother and sister.
Mm-hmm. Just had a nice romantic bath together.
Okay.
Yeah.
They actually had a blood bath.
They literally had a blood bath.
That's fucked.
He also said he was kind of bummed because he said he was planning to wear that shirt again.
That, you know, he didn't wash, so.
But he was pissed that it had blood on it. Like, that's what he was thinking of. Like,
I'm surprised he didn't just wear it
anyway. And that he was planning to wear that shirt again. Right. He was like, no, I'd like to wear this and just go to school in this shirt. Like, what? So one of the other grisly details of this is that Lucas said when he slashed Katie's throat, she said, I can't, and then couldn't finish saying breathe.
Oh.
And Kim said she heard this. And yeah. She said she described it as, quote, a scary voice, which was, quote, all croaky.
Oh.
Okay. And she just says it like it was weird Kim. And scary and croaky. As your little sister is being murdered by your boyfriend.
But she doesn't think of these people as like her mother and her little sister. Like she just thinks of them as like in the way of her and Lucas.
So like we said, they took the bath together.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kim dragged the mattress from her sister's room, her own mattress. Because they shared
I was going to say the one that she just killed her sister on.
No, but it was from the same room.
Right, right.
So she grabbed the mattress right next to her, where her sister lay brutally butchered right next to her. Blood everywhere.
I was going to say, you don't just easily take a mattress out of a room. No, like, they were in there for a bit.
She dragged it out of the room. She brought it downstairs to the living room. They had sex.
Of course, I knew that was coming.
Then they watched TV together while eating ice cream, snuggled under a blanket on the mattress.
For 3 days.
Drank alcohol from the cabinet. And right after this happened, so they had sex, they got some ice cream. Then they watched all 4 Twilights.
That's why this is called the Twilight
Murder. This is why this is called the Twilight Murder. And honestly, I get it, because that is so shocking. Like, what? You watched all 4 Twilights? First of all, you just murdered 2 people, your mother and your sister, and 2. You watched all 4 Twilights?
Actually, wait, isn't there 5 Twilights?
I don't know. They watched 4 of them.
Wow.
Like, fuck.
Because there's the regular one, then there's New Moon, then there's Eclipse, and then, yeah, there's 5, because there's Breaking Dawn Part 1 and 2.
Well, I guess they only watched, maybe they watched Part 1 and 2 as 1.
I'm glad that they didn't get to watch Part 5.
There you go. Or maybe they watched Breaking Dawn 1 and 2 together.
Maybe. Whatever. I'm pissed.
Either way, they sat and watched the Twilight movies, which I'm sure they considered themselves like Edward and Bella. You know that.
Except that they didn't kill their parents.
No, but they were, you know.
What?
Like we just love each other. And Noah wants us to be together and we have to do what we have to do.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So Twilight Murders.
A lot to unpack there.
So they had planned initially to complete suicide together after this, but they didn't do it, obviously. They wrote a suicide note entitled, Fuck You World. And it said, Fuck you, world.
How angsty.
And it also said, I want to be cremated, and I want mine and Lucas's ashes scattered at a special place. We don't
you
give a...
You think?
Oh, you caught me.
I'm so sorry. I just got so mad. I'm sorry.
It says, I want to be cremated, and I want mine and Lucas's ashes scattered at our special place. We don't give a fuck anymore.
Okay. Can I go now?
Yeah,
you think that we're going to just scatter your ashes in a special fucking place?
Yeah, because you know what? Ted Bundy's ashes were scattered where he put his victims.
What?
You didn't know that?
No.
I thought I said that in the episode.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure I did.
I mean, it was a long time ago, and we all know how my memory works.
As
so.
His final fuck you to his victims, where he used to put all, like, his little garden of, like, skulls that he would come up there and, like,
who
put
did
makeup
that?
And shit. They have to. The law.
I'd lie. I'd break the law for that.
Somebody, he was scattered up there.
She's a mostly law-abiding citizen, but she'd break the law for that. She says about herself.
Well, and don't worry, because they weren't actually planning on killing themselves.
Obviously not.
They did that as a, you know, like, I think that was like
their
contingency plan, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like I said, when police showed up, they're sitting together under a blanket on that mattress, eating ice cream, super nonchalant.
And they said, why don't you go upstairs and see? That's the scariest part to me of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. It's terrifying. So, let's hammer in what they had done and what they were sitting with in the house for 36 hours.
Uh-huh.
So, the pathologist.
Okay.
The pathologist said that Elizabeth, again, was stabbed 8 times. 5 in the hands when she tried to fight him off. There was 1 located to her right shoulder, 2 to her neck. The stab wounds to the neck had resulted in severing her internal jugular veins. 1 had almost completely severed her windpipe. And the cause of death was stab wounds to the neck. And the injuries were not instantly fatal.
Oh, no.
There was evidence that she survived for at least a short time as they were being inflicted and a little bit after.
Oh, my God.
The degree of force used was, they said, pretty moderate because the tracks of the wounds had not passed through any bone tissue.
Okay.
So to the body of 13-year-old Katie, he said there were 2 stab wounds to the neck, One had entered the left side, resulting in a small defect within the right vertical artery. This caused a moderate amount of bleeding, but not enough volume of bleeding to have really, like, messed with her cerebral blood flow to really be, like, the absolute cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
Her body was found with a pillow over her face, and they examined her lungs, and they said that she'd probably died from a hemorrhage from a stab wound to the neck and also smothering.
Oh, my God.
There was an injury to one of her vertebra, which suggests that there was severe force with the stab.
To, like, go all the way through. Enough
to
go all the way
through to her vertebrae.
Right.
Initially, Lucas would not speak to the police when he was arrested. He was like, nope, shocking, not saying a thing. But Kim was just like, sit down and let me tell you what happened from the beginning.
Because, like, she probably thought that she was, like, cool.
Well, she just didn't care.
Right.
It wasn't even, I'm cool. It's like, I literally just don't care.
That's
so
insane.
Here's the story.
That's insane.
They said she had zero remorse, like none. And when they even asked her, she was like, no, I don't care.
I always am like, imagine, but imagine being the investigator that had to talk to her.
No.
I'd be like, terrifying. I don't want to be in the same room as you. Can we do this through a double-sided mirror?
Yeah, I don't want to do this. Well, because they were both 14, the media couldn't name them initially mm-hmm. when they were arrested, you know, because of age. It was 7 months until the trial happened. The town was freaking out. There were rumors starting about who the hell it could have been. Obviously, people were already being like, it was probably her daughter and the boyfriend. Right. They were finally named in June 2017 when the reporting restriction was lifted. This is when people start remembering all these red flags that they're like, huh.
Duh.
So people said Lucas was obsessed with this case that had happened 10 months earlier than the murders of Elizabeth and Katie.
Mm-hmm.
And it had happened very close by. And it was a 42-year-old man, Warren Free, who was their friend Adam's father.
Oh.
And he had been attacked by local teens and killed.
Jesus. At his home. What's up with the teenagers in this place?
Yes. It was 3 a.m. and some teens were destroying his fence. So he came out holding a metal pipe and just was like, what the fuck, stop. Off. They attacked him and beat him with the pipe, killing him on his front porch.
Jesus.
These kids got away with it.
How? They just couldn't be identified?
Yeah.
Was that really loud?
It
Sorry.
Was really.
Sorry.
How?
My bad.
Yeah, I don't.
Sorry if I just bursted your car speakers.
Yeah, I don't know how they got away with it, but
they just
Lucas,
couldn't be identified, I guess.
Well, they were. They went to trial. I don't know how they got off somehow, but Lucas was very intrigued by this.
Yeah.
And Adam said Lucas was initially trying to be, like, supportive of him and be like, oh, I'm really sorry that your dad got murdered on your porch. But he was more concerned, it seemed, with how they got away with it and what had actually happened, like the grisly details he wanted.
He was already probably thinking about killing Elizabeth.
Yeah, he was already in that, like, weird place. So when police asked, how'd you come up with this plan, to Lucas and Kim,
mm-hmm.
Kim told police, we just went on general knowledge, really, because the voice box, the stabbing in the throat and the bath because of the dog, so she wouldn't smell the blood.
What?
Like, you left the room a bloody fucking mess. What do you mean you took a bath because the dog would smell the blood?
That doesn't even make any sense.
You left two fucking rooms full of blood, you dumbass.
Right.
What? And she said, also, Lucas doesn't like the smell of blood. How do you know?
What?
How do you know that?
Like, what?
How have you smelled that much blood that you know you don't like the smell? Like, I don't think anybody wants to smell blood, really. I'm sure some people do, but, like, I don't think that's something many of us think about.
No.
But, like, you've had enough around you that you've just sniffed it enough that you're like,
I don't even actually, like, think of,
like, I have an
that
opinion
it has
about
much
that.
Of a, like, I don't think it I've does. Been around enough blood to smell, to know what it smells
it
like.
It definitely
I
does.
I don't
and
know.
It's not like I don't want to smell blood, but, like, to have an opinion about it, to the fact that, like, she's like, well, Lucas, I know for a fact
that's
that
one of
Lucas
his qualms.
Does not, it's one of his weird neuroses that he doesn't like the smell of blood.
Yeah.
It's just strange.
Okay, well, you know.
She later told a psychiatrist, I wanted to get revenge for the way that my mother treated me. She then said, I did not feel anything for my mother. She deserved it, and I'm glad she's dead. And then Lucas described that he said when him and Kim first got together, he said he felt wanted, he felt needed, and he said, then I felt like I had to protect her from any perceived threat.
Okay.
So when he committed the murders, he said he was very calm, he felt very happy, because he said he was protecting Kim.
Right.
From the threat.
Yeah, because her mom was so threatening.
Yeah. So Kim says, after, you know, about the whole thing, she says, we felt laid back about what had happened. Neither one of us felt bad about it. Like, she's just like, I don't give a shit.
That's insane to me.
And the detective chief inspector, Martin Holvey, said, quote, the fact of what happened in those 36 hours after and how they carried on as normal, watching TV, watching a film, going upstairs to use the toilet while people are lying dead upstairs, it defies belief.
It does.
And he said he didn't even have a precedent for this. He was like, I've never seen anything like this.
Wow.
They also considered it, more Kim, considered it that she was doing a favor to her mother. She said, quote, my mom doesn't have to deal with me anymore being like suicidal. And she doesn't have to wake up worrying every morning to see if I'm still alive. And then she said about Katie that she said she saved her from growing through, quote, the heartbreak and just all the emotions and stuff.
What a hero you are, girl.
So she thinks she's doing everybody a favor. Like, even now, she's like, no, I did the right thing.
It's like, okay, but you just get to live the rest of your life? Obviously, she's in jail, but it's like...
Yeah, it's like, that makes sense a lot.
Okay, Kim.
So they were both initially charged with murder. And in the UK, anyone over the age of 10, you are criminally responsible for your actions.
Oh, wow.
It's not like a minor thing where, like, you don't get murder because you're not 18 kind of thing.
Nope, 10 is very young.
Well, the defense tried to use mental instability, obviously. They were going to go for the insanity defense.
Mm-hmm.
So they were looking to get manslaughter by way of diminished responsibility. So a psychiatric report by Dr. Oliver White on August 15th, 2016, this is from the court documents,
mm-hmm.
said that Lucas Markham was not then suffering either from a severe or enduring mental illness or from a depressive episode, although his mood instability was an important feature of his emerging personality structure. He recounted the history of his experiences of domestic violence between his parents and the multiple different foster care placements which flowed from the breakdown of their relationship, culminating in his living with his aunt from the age of 4 or 5, which was around the time his mother died of cancer. He had a long-standing, difficult relationship with his father, which appeared to have been highly influenced by his father's drinking, resulting in a lack of care, supervision, and nurturing to the children.
Mm-hmm.
A consequence of his experiences during his childhood was that he had lacked the opportunity to develop skills in self-regulation of his own emotions. It was assessed that his specific emerging personality traits were in the domains of emotionally unstable and dissocial personality disorder, but due to his age, he fell short of a formal diagnosis of personality disorder.
Okay.
The doctor also said that Lucas Markham had a high risk of continuing his trajectory with regards to his personality development, such as that formal diagnosis of personality disorder. It was probably going to happen when he was an adult.
Right.
He was like, if we had let this go and this had never happened, he would definitely have been formally.
Because he's like crossing off all the things on the way.
There was also another report on September 5th, 2016, and this was Dr. Tracy King, who's a psychologist. They said there were no concerns regarding his intellectual functioning. Such that might have led to a greater tendency to be influenced by others or to not understand the consequences of his actions.
Okay.
So they were like, he knows what he did.
Yeah.
He also had a history of early childhood trauma. They said the domestic violence, the father's drinking, that was an issue. They said these experiences had shown to have organic neurochemical correlates in the brain. There could be a gross alteration in the amygdala, the emotional center in your brain.
Oh, okay.
These would be evident in adulthood and would lead to emotional regulation difficulties. Like, they're saying he just does not know how to regulate his emotions. His exposure to domestic violence and the fear that this would instill in a young child activated his primitive brain on a consistent fight or flight pathway. So they were like, because he was exposed to this violence and fear when he was younger of people he was supposed to trust around him, it immediately activated that fight or flight.
Yeah.
And he was just constantly in a state of fight or flight.
Right.
Which brings you into this.
And he leaned a lot more towards fight.
Exactly.
Because it's like, kind of had to from a young age,
I guess. He just kind of like is always in this state of like, somebody's going to hurt me, so I'm going to hurt people first kind of thing. And it says, for him, this meant that minor threats and challenges could feel like a real threat to his existence. Mm-hmm. Like, he took everything as primitive, like, I gotta protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, so he's gonna act disproportionately. to these things.
Right.
Obviously.
That's really interesting. I liked that you went into that.
And they said he's also, when threatened, he's also very likely to experience a much higher degree of dissociative symptoms than what would be normal.
Huh.
So he will like just disassociate from like he's doing here. He's just telling it like, yeah, this is what I did.
That's really interesting.
He just disassociates from it completely.
Right.
Yeah. So in the end, even though they found all these things where they're saying, you know, the fight or flight response is constantly activated and, you know, when he's an adult, he's probably going to be diagnosed with a personality disorder. They said right now,
he does not have
an insanity defense. He is not insane.
Right.
He knows what he did. He's very aware. He's intellectually functioning.
Well, and even if you do have a personality disorder, that doesn't technically mean you're insane, right?
No, because it's technically not, you know, it doesn't... Certain ones, I'm sure, can go with it, but what they're talking about doesn't seem to go with.
And typically, insanity is just a break in your sanity.
Yeah, like, yeah, or like, you know, just some mental disorder that makes it so you can't understand the consequences of your actions.
Right.
And they said he definitely does. So in the end, they found that he was not going to get that defense. They had to give it up. I think it was like the day before his trial was set. They were like, yeah, you can't use that defense now.
Oh, shit. Imagine having that again. Imagine having to scramble to what are we going to say now?
Exactly. So he was first going to plead guilty to manslaughter, but now they had to change it to pleading guilty to murder because he couldn't get manslaughter now. Now, Kim was also going to use that insanity defense and she was going to plead guilty to manslaughter.
Did it work for her?
No.
Wow.
And
the fact that she's not technically insane is terrifying.
No, well, because she understands the consequences.
It's so crazy.
Like, I fully believe she understands.
Oh, I do too. I'm just saying, like,
so she shouldn't get it. Because you don't want to give it to people who just seem insane. You want to give it to somebody who literally is like, I don't understand what
I did, right?
Like, wait, what?
It's like a blackout almost.
But she's like,
it's just, I don't want to give it to her. I'm just saying, it's so crazy.
It is.
That she did all of this and was like, yep, I did that.
Yeah, it's insane. It truly is.
Exactly. But it's not.
So Lucas forfeited his trial when he did his guilty plea.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just guilty. Now it's on to Kim. So Kim went to trial in October at Nottingham Crown Court, and she pled not guilty to murder, and she claimed mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she said that it was the mixture of her mental health and Lucas being controlling and controlling her every move that made
her do this. Turning on each other right away.
Exactly. So now...
turning on him.
Because he didn't turn on her at all. I was going to say. And in fact, it was released that she was very detached from Lucas almost immediately.
Well, because she like probably has no actual attachment skill.
He did what she needed him to do.
And
now she's done.
Because she's only in, again, it's Kim's world.
Yeah. She used him for what she needed him for.
And he's gone now, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. And now he can deal with whatever he needs to deal with.
Wow.
And it's like they were literally obsessed with each other to the point of murder. But after he did it, she was just unconcerned. She said, you know, whatever he gets, I don't care.
That's insane.
Like, did not but care. Not. And all of a sudden, she's sitting there saying he was controlling and shit. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And she's not controlling enough for,
like, you wanted to, like, run away with him and start your life together, but okay.
Yeah. She had no emotional response to his sentencing at all. She didn't care. So she was assessed, and a consultant forensic psychiatrist named Philip Joseph was the one to get some crazy shit out of her.
Ooh.
So he said, she said, I don't miss my mom, and I'm glad she's dead, even though I'm in a sticky situation now.
Oh, it's just a sticky situation.
Yeah. She also said she deserved it. I'm glad she's dead. We felt laid back about what we had done. Neither one of us felt bad about it. And she said, just the fact that it happened so quickly, that gave me peace of mind. Because, you know, it wasn't like torture or anything.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's good. At least it wasn't torture.
In your mind.
Yeah. She also said about her sister, she said she felt a bit sad about that.
A bit.
Yeah, a bit. So his conclusion in his report, which was September 22nd, 2016.
So this girl is wild in.
He said she was not suffering from an abnormality of mental functioning caused by a recognized medical condition. And therefore, she did not have a defense to murder or manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility. He said the family dynamics were explored. She had attachment difficulties with her mother. She explained the circumstances leading up to the killings of her mother and sister, and said yes, it was jointly planned, and she was not forced to go along with it. She said he did not force me to do it. I wanted to do it. Like, she was very forthcoming about that.
Because she just doesn't give a shit.
She just doesn't give a shit. And she said her mother was the main problem in her life, and she said she felt excited about the thought of killing her. And she remained glad after the fact that her mother was dead. She felt nothing, mm-hmm. not a stitch of remorse. And she said she did kind of feel a little bad about Katie.
Right.
So she said she missed her a little bit.
Yeah.
The doctor also said she did not accept, or Dr. Joseph, Philip Joseph said he did not accept the loss of her belongings in that one situation where, like,
everything was moving.
Yeah,
out.
Everything
yeah.
was taken
as
out
the
of
tipping
house.
Point.
He did not accept that as like a trigger. He was like, no, that happens to normal children, and
we just said it happened to us.
They get through it. They get mad. They move on. Like, we cannot call this the tipping point because that shouldn't be a tipping point.
And a lot worse happens to people that don't kill their parents.
Exactly. He was like, nope. And he was like, she has an adjustment disorder for sure.
Yeah.
But, like, this is not cause for what she did. And they said, right, if she was suffering from full-blown adjustment disorder, he said that she would not now continue to express satisfaction that her mother was dead. He was like, this would change if she was suffering from that.
Okay.
And it's not.
That's interesting.
She's still sticking with this. I did it. I'm happy I did it. And she's dead. And that's fine. I feel nothing. So
that's so scary.
Yeah. And yeah, it's insane. And then they had Dr. Liz Yardley is a criminologist, and she really specializes in child killers. She said the sibling rivalry thing that she was using, that, like, you know, Katie got more attention, all that. That's why I killed my mom.
Mm-hmm.
She said, that's bullshit. That's not a motive. She was
yeah.
like, no. That plenty of people have sibling rivalry and they don't kill people.
Yep.
And she said it was just Kim's entitlement to do whatever she wanted, whenever she wanted. And it's part of her psychopathy, essentially. She was like, people think it's really in Kim's head, the whole, like, my mom
the
likes
rivalry.
My sister better. Because friends and family were like, no, she didn't. Favorite one of them.
Well, and
like,
just I mean, it's a very small thing, but take that Facebook post.
Yeah.
It's not like she didn't give a fuck about her.
Exactly. She didn't ignore her. And then she was like, and Graham said there was no favoritism. I did not see it. Not that, you know, of course he's going to say something nice, but it's like,
well, and if I mean, even take the fact that they shared a room together. Like,
yeah.
It's not like Katie lived in this like beautiful bedroom that Kim
exactly.
didn't have, and Kim slept in the basement.
Exactly.
Like,
it's like, so both doctors were like, no. That is not, no. This
right.
is a bullshit motive that she's using to try to look like this, like, oh, poor me.
Right.
And it's like, the real thing here is that she saw her mother as stopping her and Lucas from being together.
She was threatened.
And it wasn't that she loved Lucas, because I don't think she has the capacity to love
it's
anything.
Just what she wanted right
she
then.
She wanted it. She wasn't getting it. And someone was telling her she couldn't have it. And Lucas was that person that was treating her like a princess
mm-hmm.
and trying and holding
and giving
her on a pedestal,
her everything,
and she wanted that, so
right.
she was like, don't take that away from me. And then they later say, I mean, the police ask Lucas straight up, because again, Kim is claiming, you know, Katie died because she was the cause of my mom not paying attention
and
to
what
me.
Did Lucas say?
Lucas says to the police,
she
they were like
her.
Why did Katie die? And he was like, well, she would have called the police. And they're like, is that it? And he goes, pretty much.
Oh.
So that proves that motive of sibling rivalry is bullshit.
Right.
It has nothing to do with it.
Right.
They killed Katie because she was a liability. She was just in the house and they
right.
had to get rid of her. But Kim is sitting here trying to turn it into something so she can be seen as a sympathetic character.
Right.
When in reality, she wanted her mom dead. That
mm-hmm.
was the end of it. She wanted mm-hmm. to kill her mom because she stood in her way.
Katie just happened to be there.
Katie happened to be there.
I wish that Katie had been asleep over that
night. I know. I really do.
And that Elizabeth was, too.
I know. Seriously. I wish everybody was out of the house. So, two expert witnesses. Those two ones were called to talk about Kim's mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And they, again, said no. They said, yeah, she definitely has some kind of adjustment disorder. And she definitely has a severe attachment disorder.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, and that obviously stems
she's
from,
like, not attached to anything.
Yeah, and they were like, and this can stem from what happened in childhood. I mean, her father abandoned, she was in foster care, the thing with her mom, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So they were like, for sure. But they were like, it's not cause to give her the insanity defense. So they also said, quote, she seemed to enjoy the attention that she was receiving from a number of professionals and had suggested in the future writing a book about her life.
Okay, Kim.
This suggested that she had an inappropriate level of self-esteem and self-importance,
mm-hmm.
and also felt a sense of justification in the harm that she caused to her mother and sister, who she felt had wronged her. So this proves, too.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with that shit.
She's in love with herself.
She is an entitled piece of shit.
She's probably a narcissist.
She's for sure a narcissist.
Right.
So the jury took 2 hours.
Narcissists are scary.
They are. So the jury took 2 hours of deliberation and agreed that just because she had a shitty childhood does not mean you get diminished responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So a unanimous answer of guilty of murder.
Good.
So they were together in court for their dual sentencing. And the judge is a fucking legend with what he said.
Oh, yes. Hand it to me.
I love good judges. He said, quote, "You were, in my view, in a hermetically sealed, pathetic world of your own, of deep, deep selfishness and immaturity, where only your feelings and desires matter and no one else's." And then he said, "I sentence you as children, which you are. I sentence based on hope for you and for society rather than an expectation of your failure."
Shit.
But he's literally like, so you were in this pathetic little world that you made for yourselves. You guys are fucking gross. Disgusting.
And you're, you know how like 14-year-olds obviously like hate being called children. They're like, and he's like, yeah, you're children.
You're fucking children. So they were both sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 20 years.
Good.
May 2017, they both appealed, saying that their age should be considered in sentencing.
No.
And it was reduced to life. Well, they still were life, but they had a minimum now of 17 and a half years.
What a reduction.
That's not a lot. And this was when their identities were officially made public, mm-hmm. in 2017. Elizabeth Edwards' partner, Graham, said that he saw Edwards, Kim and Lucas as, quote, another Myra Hindley and Ian Brady.
Wow.
And especially Kim, he said, is Myra Hindley.
That's scary. But if you think about it, that is scary that they reduced it to 17 and such years, because she would be in her early 30s.
Yeah.
Like, she'd be young as fuck.
Oh, absolutely.
And able to do this again.
Yeah, it's not good at all. But again, they could serve life.
Again, yes.
And he also said, quote, "She should never, ever be let out."
No.
And that is the end. That is where we stand.
I hope they're in jail. Never let out.
They're in prison, hopefully for life, but at a very minimum of 17 and a half years. They were sentenced in 2017. So
hopefully they run out of appeals.
I hope so. I hope they don't get out, to be honest.
That's really scary. And that was the whole part about the hand was really sad.
It was so brutal.
Mom's hand.
It was so brutal. And then, like, just the callousness of them laying downstairs, having sex, watching Twilight, eating ice cream, and just snuggling.
Right.
Going to sleep at night on those mattresses with them dead upstairs.
For two nights, right?
For 2 days. It's like, what the fuck is inside of you?
Nothing.
It's brutal, and that they deserve what they got.
That is bleak.
That is bleak.
Works in a Mean Girls
Very
reference.
Bleak. Oof. Yeah. I am.
Well,
shook.
If that's so bleak, now I'm really nervous, because I don't know a lot about the Ian Brady and Myra Hindley case.
Yeah, that's going to be a doozy, just letting everybody know. That is a hoo boy.
Is it going to be like Toolbox Murders-esque, or Toy Box Murder? Like where I want you to stop?
In a different way.
Yeah, I don't like that it has to do with children, because we haven't done a lot of children.
Yeah, I hate it, but it's a very important case. And
right, that's the thing.
And it's one that I know a lot of people have been dying to hear. And I get it, because before I had kids, I was obsessed with reading about that case. I didn't, like, love that they killed children.
Yeah, but
like,
it's the psyche.
Yeah, it was a little easier to stomach when didn't have them of my own. But
see, like, I consider your kids, like, my practice kids, so they're, like, a portion of my kids. So, like, kid shit just fucks me up no matter what.
Yeah, it's when you can relate a child you love to it that you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's so next week.
Stay tuned.
In the meantime, hit us with a follow on Instagram.
@ Morbid Podcast.
I forgot the next part.
Twitter.
I know. You can always tweet at us @
A Morbid Podcast.
Send us a Gmail.
MorbidPodcast@gmail.com.
We hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it weird.
But not so weird that you throw a chair across the classroom and meet your, like, soul partner that's probably really not your soul partner. You guys shouldn't have met each other at all. Don't meet that person that does that, and don't carry out these actions, because they're not good.
They're not.
I don't know.
They're bad.
That wasn't my best, but bye.
Don't kill people. Don't do it. Bye.
Bye.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In May of 1980, near Anaheim, California, Dorothy Jane Scott noticed her friend had an inflamed red wound on his arm and seemed unwell. She insisted on driving him to the local hospital to get treatment. While he waited for his prescription, Dorothy went to grab her car to pick him up at the exit, but would never be seen alive again, leaving us to wonder, decades later, what really happened to Dorothy Jane Scott. From Wondery, Generation Y is a podcast that covers notable true crime cases like this one and many more. Every week, hosts Aaron and Justin sit down to discuss a new case, covering every angle and theory, walking through the forensic evidence and interviewing those close to the case to try to discover what happened. And with over 450 episodes, there's a case for every true crime listener. Follow the Generation Y podcast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.